This is, I don't know what this is. The Precency Bias? The Big Show? Shortened? It's one or the other. It's me, Zach Manas. It's Sean O'Neill, and we're doing a rare pregame podcast. Because it's Game 6 Habs Leafs, buddy. Here we are.
You know, I want to do my best Eddie Vedder impression and say that we're still alive against all odds.
That would be Eddie Vedder and Phil Collins, actually.
Correct. They did do that mashup album.
That would be great. Yeah, Pearl Jam's had a lot of drummers. People don't realize Phil Collins was one of them at one point in there. All right, we're getting people the content they want immediately. Pearl Jam and Phil Collins.
They were off to an amazing start.
Yeah, came for a pre-gamer. They fired up the pod that was, you know, dropped just hours before the game, and they want to hear us talk Habs Leafs, I imagine, and here we are giving them Phil Collins. What would you rank your Genesis members, if you could, for me?
I'm pulling a blank on, who's the third one? There are three, right?
I think there's three, and yeah, I have no idea. He's always the
Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, and the other guy?
The other guy.
I guess that would be my ranking, yeah.
Oh, you're Collins over Gabriel?
Yeah, I think so.
Sure, I don't care. All right, let's talk Habs Leafs. All right, so here we are doing this because the Habs have dragged us back into this series as both of us had really, and I got the chance to already say this when I did the recency bias following up Game 5, dragged us back into this thing. We checked out. I was out, man.
I was out, too, to the point where I was barely going to watch Thursday night. Like I seriously contemplated not doing it. And then, you know, of course I did watch, and of course he gets sucked back in and they get out to the big lead, and then they blew it. And I was frankly relatively convinced they were going to lose in overtime on Thursday. Yeah. But they didn't. And, you know, sports is just so fucking stupid. I spent, you know, the better part of last week just being really down on this team, which I probably still am in the macro sense, but I have, you know, I'm back. I've 100% talked myself into them stealing this series now with Game 6 at home in front of some fans, and then, you know, the Leafs start to spiral, and then, you know, perhaps pull off the upset for the ages.
Yeah, that's I mean, the main point I wanted to, well, basically, I wanted to do this podcast, because we got Game 6 tonight, and I need to talk to somebody about how I'm feeling about things. And so, you know, no point in creating content, no point in us having a conversation not recorded. So let's talk about how the Habs, how we've talked ourselves into how the Habs can actually win this thing. Now, obviously, the main story is, oh, there's going to be people in the building. I mean, that's exciting. I'm not trying to dismiss that. But I'm not sure that's the biggest difference maker here as we've gotten to Game 6. It's exciting. I think there's going to be a percentage of Leafs fans in there. I'm very intrigued to see how loud 2,500 fans are.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to sound like. Like, considering we haven't seen, if you've been watching any sports in the States, I suppose we've been seeing more people in the stands recently and getting more adjusted to it. But I guess since we haven't heard anyone in the Bell Center in over a year now, it might sound like something, but it's not going to be, it's not the 21,000 that you get in the Bell Center normally. So I'm not putting as much weight on the people being in the stands as I am a few other factors for what the Habs have done here. And I'll start off with it being, the Habs have not played well really at any point in this series. Game 5 was definitely their best game, and they blew a 3-0 lead. Game 1 was decent enough, and they won by 1 on a on a pretty special, and special might mean a little bit lucky, goal by Paul Byron there. As I was saying on the last episode, they haven't, you know, you stack up the periods, they've been the better team maybe 2 or 3 periods, and yet they're in this thing. That's both a bad sign and in a way a good sign, because this team can play better than they have so far.
They can. It would be nice to see it for more than 10 minutes at a time.
Yes.
You know, taking a step back from my somewhat artificial optimism after the Game 5 win, man, this team looked real bad games 2, 3, and 4.
Yes, terrible.
And like, to the point, like, I, you know, Habs Twitter has oftentimes been a dark place over the past whatever 5 seasons, but like, I almost feel like that's about the lowest I've seen this fan base collectively. everyone, I mean, everyone was out on this team. Which, you know, and then that's hockey. Then they come off and they eke out a win, and then all of a sudden you're right back in it. And you are right. They, you know, have not played their best hockey yet. I would say that the Leafs, frankly, probably haven't played their best hockey yet either, which is maybe the flip side of that equation. That's but, true. You know, all of a sudden you just need to win. You need to win two in a row. Carey's been playing well. He hasn't been dominant, but he's been playing well. And yeah, you're at home, and there is a chance. If Carey can steal one and get him to game seven, then it's a coin flip, right? So Carey, it's still unlikely, but they got a chance. They got a shot.
Carey has been pretty goddamn good. You said he hasn't been dominant. You can't ask for much more. Yes, a couple goals in game five were a little soft. But other than that, he's been godlike, dude.
He has been very good. I guess you could say he hasn't stolen a game yet. I don't think that's really on him because he has gotten nothing in terms of support.
No, but stealing a game in the playoffs sometimes means you win 1-0.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I feel like we haven't had the game where he makes, and this is not a criticism of him because he's been really, really good.
Yeah,
this is the best he's looked all season, but we haven't had that, like, 47 save, steal a 1-0 game, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Type performance that we've seen that we saw out of Halak in 2010, or that we saw out of Theodore in 02, or even Price in some earlier playoff runs. Like, he's been very solid, and he just hasn't had the support, but he hasn't totally shut the door yet.
No, and that's what the Leafs have really, by letting the Habs win game five, that's the position they've put themselves in, is now Carey Price just needs to, he just really needs to steal one to put this thing into a coin toss territory, and he can easily steal two games now. They've really put themselves in a position where the Habs can still, they can outplay the Habs in every way, and Carey Price is looking good enough right now that, you know, he could straight up just take two games in a row from you. And Saturday night at the Bell Center historically has been incredible for him. So they wandered into that territory. And for them, for the fan base, who was very, very confident, rightfully so, extremely confident after game four, clearly, I enjoyed really taking in all the media on Friday because they're starting to see the path for this to go, how things go for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now.
Yeah, and when we previewed the series, we always said that that was kind of the secret ingredient, right? Like, if Montreal could somehow get into the heads of Toronto and start having the fans going crazy and start having the media going crazy. I think sometimes we overstate that stuff, but I think that's kind of a real thing for this Toronto team. Like, the expectations are sky high. Their window is still wide open, but it's, you know, by definition, getting smaller every year. And this is a team with a history of coming up short in the playoffs. And with, you know, not only coming up short, but like some pretty spectacular collapses. And if for whatever reason the Habs can win tonight, if Carey Price can steal game six, you know, that really becomes the storyline going into game seven.
For sure. And I mean, so I was listening, whether it was Overdrive or Tim and Friends, all talking, they kept repeating the same mantra on everything that I was watching. And it was, none of these guys were on the teams that collapsed. None of these guys. I was like, okay, you keep saying it, though, and that makes me think this still matters. Because, you know, these things linger. They can linger from Babe Ruth getting traded in the early 1900s right up until 2003. Like, they happen to fan bases and teams for whatever reason. And, frankly, the only way for it to be proper is for the Leafs to get a 3-1 series lead and blow it. You know, losing in six to the Habs or something, that in an even fought series, that doesn't fit the narrative of what happens to this team. And they need to be in a position where it was there for the taking, and then it falls apart. That's how it works for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Here's what else we haven't seen yet. And this speaks a little bit to, the Habs haven't played well yet, really, in the series.
Nope.
We haven't had a Gallagher game yet. And I don't know, maybe he's not recovered enough for that to happen in this series, but usually at some point, Brendan Gallagher puts the team on his back a little bit. We haven't seen that at all. Now, a big part of that is the Deneau line has been out there shutting Matthews down. And after game one, I texted you and said, you know, it's interesting. For as good as Deneau has been at shutting down guys like McDavid and Crosby, he doesn't seem to have Matthews solved. At this point, that definitely has become the case. He's been a thorn in Matthews' side the whole time, that whole line side. They've done a really good job. Matthews with just one goal in this whole series to this point is fantastic. That's amazing. I mean, we saw how lethal this guy was all season. They've got the line changes in the, they being the Habs, got the line changes in their favor tonight, so that it will most likely be Deneau lined up against Matthews again. So all that to get back to my point on Gallagher, I get why perhaps we haven't seen the Gallagher game yet, but we haven't had the Gallagher game yet. Toffoli has been non-existent pretty much in this series, unfortunately. So those are bad things. That's why they're in a 3-2 hole in a way. But in the other way is, if these guys show up, there's a chance here.
Yeah, there is. The flip side of that is, if you had told me before the series started, like, Carey's going to be really, really good, the Habs are going to shut down Austin Matthews, the Habs are essentially going to shut down Mitch Marner, and John Tavares will only play about one period. That sounds like a recipe for success, right?
It does.
And I mean, they still have a chance, but, you know, Toronto is, that was the really, I think, discouraging thing about games 2, 3, and 4 is just Montreal did not look like they played in the same sport practically as Toronto.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, Toronto was, you know, that the Leafs were skating circles around them with, you know, not even playing their best hockey with their two best players, you know, not even playing all that well. Like, it was the Galchenyuks and the Simmons and the Spezzas of the world who were beating us, which is bizarre. But you're right, like, to a certain extent, the big names on both sides, with the exception of Price and Nylander, haven't really played all that well. It's kind of been the depth guys on both teams who've been playing above their head. And maybe that's what it comes down to in game 6 and 7 is which starters show up. Is it Matthews and Marner finally doing something and doing some damage, or is it Gallagher and Toffoli and Weber and Price?
I disagree. Our superstars have showed up. Did you see overtime? Suzuki and Caulfield.
Fair point. That was fun. That was really fun.
Man, Caulfield already in goalies' heads in that Campbell 100% thought Caulfield was going to shoot. I thought, like, he's a shooter. Yeah. The kid shoots at every opportunity, and he just sent it immediately back to Suzuki. What a thing. I mean, even if the Habs get eliminated on Saturday night, which is entirely possible because they've been, again, outplayed this entire series, that moment is one that's pretty awesome that we get to take from this thing, is the future in OT against the Leafs did one of the more fun things that we've seen certainly all season long.
Yeah, it's been a not great series, but the Byron goal and the Suzuki goal are, you know, maybe not iconic, maybe that's a little bit strong for a first round series, but those were both pretty fun and pretty memorable. The Byron goal, because it was a beauty, and the Suzuki goal, because it's, you know, hopefully the future of the franchise. He's been really good, too. I don't want to lump him in with some of the guys who haven't shown up. Like, Nick Suzuki's probably been our best forward throughout the course of this series.
Yeah, Nick Suzuki is just the best, man. I'm thrilled with everything that he's done. But really, you know, while he buried that one, the overtime goal kind of belonged to Caulfield's effort. He saw Galchenyuk look to make that pass and intercepted it. Now, Galchenyuk, that was a dumb pass by him. Thank you, Galchenyuk, once again, contributing for the Canadiens. You still got it in you, buddy. But, you know, you saw, if you watch that goal, and I've watched it 1,000 times now, you know, you see Caulfield pick up that Galchenyuk makes a little head turn to see that if he's going to make the pass to the guy at the middle, and he just intercepts it. And Suzuki also sees it within 1 second, what's about to happen, and the two of them take off. And they both had borderline smiles on their faces as they took off down the ice. How many times have we seen two Habs, two on none, and just not even register a shot? And those two not only registered a shot, but beat the goalie in fine fashion.
They're both really especially for how young they are, but even full stop, they're both really smart players. And you know, when you look at Suzuki's trajectory, whether he ends up being a first line center or a second line center, like, he plays that type of really smart top line center pivot type game that I really enjoy. Like, you can just see that he has it in him. And Cofield too, you know, like a guy that size, you kind of have to understand the spacing and the angles, and it's, you know, I think he's legit, but it doesn't come easy. You kind of have to know how to work your way around the opposition and work your way around the ice, and that takes a pretty high hockey IQ as well, which I think he has.
Yeah, he does, because there was some, you know, I don't think people are necessarily worried about Caulfield's defense, more just his size in his first playoffs. Could he carry the body in a way that, you know, he just didn't get Victor Mete'd in the corner every time where somebody was just like stronger than him and took the puck away? That hasn't been the case at all. He's such a heads up player. He's like, for the most part this season, until Caulfield showed up, the one player who I would just kind of track on the ice to see what they were up to without the puck was Suzuki. And Caulfield is even more fun to track than Suzuki, just to watch what he's up to, because he's always looking for that opportunity to spring. He's always looking to sneak into a spot and set himself up. He's always headed to that next spot. And you don't see, you know, in that has been the rest of the team could use a lot more Cole Caulfield in their game. The just a heads up nature of looking for where the next play is. These guys throughout this series, the big struggle has just been putting two fucking passes together or getting anything off cleanly. Yes, you can give some credit to the Leafs for being on them, but some of it is just the basics of hockey at this NHL level has not been well executed at all by the team so far. You saw a little bit. We saw them make some clean passes through the first period and a half of Game 5. That was the first time you're like, oh, this is hockey. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's, I think a lot of this comes back to the defense, and the fact that Bergevin has stocked this roster with, you know, the rugged stay-at-home types who are good at what they do. Like, you know, he is good at spotting out those type of guys, but you can't have 7 of them on your roster in 2021. Like, that's just not the way the game is played right now. That's not the way the league is going. And this team's transition game is just non-existent, essentially. You know, I don't think you necessarily need, it'd be nice to have, but you don't necessarily need, you know, a bunch of offensive defensemen in the vein of like a PK or an Erik Karlsson. Like, they don't need to be amazing skaters and amazing scorers, but like they at least need to get things going in the other direction and not just, you know, it's all well and good to get the puck off the guy's stick, but if you're toughing it up 3 seconds later, so what?
Yeah, and that's what you see a lot of. Like, there's one game left, and we'll be watching for many other things. But that's something that when you're watching for is so disheartening. Is when they've got the other guys in the corner, they hit them. There's a bit of a puck battle. Montreal might even win the puck battle, but possession is taken over again in the defensive zone for the Habs, and nothing really comes of it. So you've exerted a bunch of energy to win a puck battle, and now you're still defending. So it's frustrating, and you know it. It'd be nice if they had a young player waiting in the wings, a puck-moving defenseman who could throw the body around probably harder than anyone else on the team available. But that's just not the case for some reason. Oh, wait, there's Romanov, who, despite the fact that Merrill is out for at least a week or two, will not be slotting into Game 6. This is it's bullshit beyond bullshit. I can't. It's so frustrating. I don't understand it, and nobody understands. I haven't heard a decent explanation, and you know, even the media guys who try and at least give an explanation to what they think is going on in Ducharme and the coaching staff's head, normally, they're throwing up their arms at this. I don't know. Nobody gets it. And, you know, there's no injury. That doesn't seem to be the case. The thing just seems to be, well, we don't believe in Romanov, which I don't understand.
And compounding the fact is, so the guy you're putting in is Gustafson?
I know.
Who... You know, so, okay, if the team wants to just put in these, like, rugged stay-at-home defensive defenseman types, I think that's really dumb, but that's one thing. You know, Gustafson is not that. Gustafson's just, you know, he brings a little bit to the table offensively, so it sounds like I'm countering what I just said 5 minutes ago, but, like, he's just, like, a really bad version of Romanov.
No, I've got some issues with Gustafson. I wouldn't have issues with Gustafson being in there if Romanov was getting in there. You know what I mean? Then I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But if you're making decisions like, well, we need our clunky stay-at-home guy, what the fuck is Gustafson doing in there? And then Brett Kulak is slotting in instead of Romanov. And Kulak is another guy who, he's a little bit more puck-moving, but I don't get that one at all, especially with the way Romanov bangs the body. Like, did we all forget that? He's our hardest hitter by a long shot all season long.
Yeah, it's like they made the decision that, you know, we can only have one sort of puck moving defenseman on the ice at all times, so we're going to go with Gustafsson instead of Romanov, and I don't get that.
It doesn't make sense. The guy played 54 of the 56 games. So I've also heard the explanation being, well, Gustafsson, we need him for the power play. Like, the guy played 6 games. He doesn't know. The power play is much better known by Romanov, I would imagine, at this point. And I watched this team all season. It was really nice to have Romanov on the power play. Some of the most exciting power play opportunities the Canadiens had in that latter half of the season was Caulfield, Suzuki, and Romanov, or Caulfield, Kotkaniemi, and Romanov out there. So I don't get it. I'm very frustrated about it. I guess we have to let it go because it's not going to change at any point in this series, even with injuries now to fucking John Merrill. So that is what it is. Romanov's still out. Kulak in for Merrill. Evans could be in as well for Game 6, which would be great if Staal comes out. I wouldn't be as excited, I guess, if Tatar comes out in his spot. Those do seem to be like the two guys who would like most likely come out, right?
I would say so, and I'm with you. I'd prefer to see Staal come out, and we'll see. We'll see which way they go with on that one. You mentioned Kotkaniemi briefly. We should give him some love as well. He's been pretty solid.
Yep.
After underwhelming to say the least regular season.
Well, if Kotkaniemi doesn't get into this series, it's probably not at this point. You know, he scored a big goal in game 5. He had a crucial goal. And I mean, look at those goals. Besides the overtimer, which was a beauty back and forth. Dirty, dirty goals. I mean, they were Corey Perry created goals for the two Armia, and then Kotkaniemi went, they were all scored right next to or in the blue paint. Like, that's what the team has got to do. That's why I'm remain shocked that we haven't seen much from Brendan Gallagher, because usually he's in there causing all sorts of problems and grinning about it, and that just hasn't been the case at all, really. The only time he got in there, he was called for a penalty in a mutual exchange that kind of set this series in some ways in the direction that it did. Toronto's been the better team. They deserve to be up in this series for sure, but that was something of a pivot point. And on the Leafs side of things, Foligno is a game-time decision for the Leafs, though I suspect he'll probably be in. I think that's a little gamesmanship questioning whether or not he'll be in. So that's the lineups going in. Obviously, it's going to be Price versus Campbell. We'll see what happens in front of 2,500. I'm excited. I'm back in. I didn't expect one Saturday after last week to be thrilled to be watching another game. But here we are on a Saturday doing a pregame once more for what hopefully isn't the final game of the Canadian season now. Thursday night? When was game 5? Thursday night? Yeah, I wasn't.
Thursday, yeah.
Again, I forgot about the game a couple times during the day and didn't really care what the result was, but we're back in it, baby.
Yeah, I'm totally sucked back in. And listen, it's had Leafs in the playoffs on a Saturday night.
Yeah, for sure.
Which has only happened one other time in my life, and that was a week ago. So I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy it, and then, you know, we'll see if the team can pull off the upset, and if they don't, we'll see. You know, we'll see what that means for the future of the franchise. But they have roped me back in for the 10 millionth time.
Obviously, home and away don't matter as much when there's no fans or barely any fans. But it did occur to me that the Habs haven't won a home game yet in this series.
Yep, fair enough. Fair point.
I don't know if that means they're due for one, but you get one at home. You don't win one at home, of course you deserve to lose the series. So just go out and get one at home. Then game 7 becomes... I think the Canadiens are in a big advantage for game 7 if they can push it to that. Because then that they've got nothing to lose. They've climbed back from 3-1. They're not expected to come out of this series. It's all the pressure falls on the Maple Leafs at that point.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And part of me does think the fans tonight are going to make a difference. I think normally we overstate that, but this is the first time these guys are going to be playing in front of anyone in over a year. You know, I don't think it's going to be the deciding factor, but I think it will be noticeable.
Yeah.
Especially if they can get like a little bit of a boost in the first 10 minutes of the first, and, you know, maybe score a quick one and get Toronto on their heels or something. I think that could be helpful.
It would be. They're going to accueillir Canadiens actually to somebody. That's going to be nice. Because it has been weird when they go through all the pregame stuff with nobody in the building. So, fans in the building, we're back in the series. And, hey, maybe they can push it to a Game 7. It'd be very exciting that'd be Monday night, I guess. Saturday, Habs-Leafs, Game 6. It's pretty It's pretty good stuff. All right, let's get out of here. This has been the mini pod. Unless there's anything else you wanna throw out there before we go.
I mean, the next time we pod will either be a second round preview or the postmortem for the 2020-2021 season.
Oh,
I guess just 2021 season. Yeah.
Yeah, just 2021. Could be Tatar's last game with the Habs. Could be Deneau's last game with the Habs.
Yeah.
That could have been the other night, too. So we'll talk about that.
Could be Ducharme's last game.
Could be. We will see. We'll see if any of that comes to fruition, or we keep talking about this team going forward as they are after this. Till next, take care.